message is to Grodin, saying that Augustus is dead, and that for the time being, at least, the command of the Roman Empire devolves upon me.
Tiberius, are you trying to deny me any part in the governing of this empire?
Yes, mother.
Yes, mother. Welcome back to Tiberius, episode 5. How are you, Papa Ben?
Doing okay. Before we jump into it, I just wanted to say real quick, just because you never know what's going to happen, Germanicus has wiped out the Chatti, but as far as the Bruteri tribe, he scattered them, but he didn't slaughter them, so they ran to the east. So they're still out there somewhere. So just to let you know that even though it didn't go according to plan, at least for the moment, they're not an effective fighting force. And I think that's maybe why Germanicus felt safe enough to go to the point where Varus and his legions had been slaughtered.
Yeah, so at the last episode, we talked about how Germanicus took his troops to Teutoburg Forest. They buried the 6-year-old remains of the legions that had been destroyed by Hermann the German. Tiberius wasn't happy about it, apparently, either because he just wasn't happy about anything Germanicus did, because he was suspicious, he was paranoid.
Tiberius hasn't been happy since he left Rhodes. Or maybe even before that, when he was forced to divorce his wife. Who knows?
Yeah, I think that was it. And he was worried, apparently, according to Tacitus, that maybe it would destroy morale. But as I said at the end of the last episode, the opposite happened. Yeah. The Romans came out of it going, let's fucking get those Germans. So
I think Germanicus knew that was probably going to be their reaction, because why would you risk complete morale sinking if you do something like this? So I think he had I think he knew how his men thought, and I think he knew exactly what he was doing. And again, it's another thing where you can honor these men who are dead. His men are going to be bound even more tightly to him. This is Caesar and Gaius Marius, in a way, all over again. And maybe that's legitimately concerning Tiberius.
I think, you know, if you go back a couple of episodes and you remember that there had been mutinies after the death of Augustus within the ranks of the Roman armies, because they wanted better conditions. They wanted more pay. They wanted earlier retirements. They wanted more land in retirement. And, the Tiberius can't really deliver a lot of that because, for some reason, cash is tight.
Right.
So what Germanicus is doing is like, listen, you motherfuckers, the reason you should be fighting out here is not for money, it's not for blocks of land,
right.
It's not for any of that bullshit. The reason you should be fighting is to revenge your brothers. That's what you should be doing. Look at what they did. Look what they did to my boy.
Bones all over the place.
Yeah. So, and they were like, sorry, boss, you're right, boss. Let's go kick some kraut keister. Right.
And I think we skipped over this, because you can only cover so much, but out of all the concessions that, that Tiberius had to make when these revolts were over, the one that really stuck was the one limiting their service to 16 years. But even that's not going to stick, because like you were saying a second ago, the military needs of this very large empire just negate any kind of term limits on service. And also they have to keep the tax, the 1% tax for the military fund, because again, when you have these massive armies all over the place on the borders, you have to be able to pay them. So Germanicus, I think you're right. I think you're right. He is trying to find some other way to tie them or give them a reason to fight. Look, your pay is shit, your conditions are shit, but now it's about revenge, and that's a very basic human motivation. And it seems that risk that Germanicus took by taking them there has paid off, and now these guys are worked up, and they want to kick some German ass, and they're not talking about money at this point. And that's what he was after the entire time.
And if you think about it from a contemporary perspective, let's say you're struggling to get people to join your modern army, to volunteer to join your army because you don't have conscription anymore.
Right.
And you're struggling to get people to join the army because the pay is shit and it's a shitty life and it sucks. If, you know, you just happen to have a couple of planes fly into some buildings and kill some of your people, it's amazing how many people will sign up willingly to join the army.
Yeah.
Not for the money or for the benefits or for the lifestyle, but for revenge for their country men and women. By the way, I don't know if you did this, but it was obviously the anniversary of 9/11 a week or so ago.
Right.
And I sat down and I rewatched the live coverage of from a couple of different networks, the whole thing, just to watch it unfold again, sort of in real time and watch the coverage from the first we interrupt our bullshitty morning show crap to say that there's a fire in one of the Twin Towers. Looks like something crashed into it, through to the second plane, through to the first building collapsing, through the second building, and just the shock and disbelief and terror from the news coverage. It was fascinating and chilling to rewatch. But also, let's remember that, 3,000 Americans died and hundreds of thousands, if not a million plus, Afghanis and Iraqis have, civilians have died who had nothing to do with it because, A, it was a Saudi attack in the first place.
Right. Yeah, most of them were Saudis.
But civilians who have died as a result of that, you know, so the greater tragedy of 9/11 isn't necessarily the American civilians who died on the day, but the hundreds of thousands of Iraqi and Afghani civilians that died in the aftermath of that. Tragic for all of them.
Yeah.
Equally tragic. But I think Americans in particular tend to forget that the consequence, the number of civilians that died a lot bigger than the Americans. Anywho, how did I get? Oh yeah, so that's my point. Is he basically said, "Listen, revenge, is why we are out here. Not money, not benefits, not lifestyle, not the uniform. It's revenge.
Payback time, right? Yeah, yeah. And that's what they're going to do now that the Baruch Terry are scattered all over the place. Germanicus is going to keep pushing east because now that he's got these guys worked up, he's wiped out one tribe, he scattered another tribe, he is now going after the main prize, Arminius. And Arminius, once again, because I don't know if he's read books, and I pray to God he hasn't, but he's a wise person, he's a thinker, and he pulls, ever so brilliantly, pulls Germanicus deeper into the German forests.
For people who don't know why we're going on about books, because I think it was in one of our other shows, but somebody did a review, I think, on the Cold War.
That's right.
Somebody left us a nasty review for the Cold War Show on iTunes, and they said, these guys just read books. They're not experts. They just read books. So, yes, we confess.
Guilty
that's
as
right.
charged.
We apologize. Our big secret has been revealed. We
the
actually
big reveal.
Don't know shit.
Yeah.
We just read books. As opposed to the people who were born knowing all of this stuff innately.
Or who were there.
It's in their genetic there. That's right. We, unfortunately, unlike every other historian or podcaster ever, we get all of our information from books. It's something that we're very ashamed and embarrassed about.
It's a guilty secret that we've
tried to hide.
Yeah.
It's like we've been caught,
and we're not funny. So
masturbating
we're sorry.
On. We read books, fucking dickheads. Anywho, fuck me. So anyway, yes. So Arminius leads them deeper and deeper into the forest. Oh, yeah. I feel like I've seen this movie before somewhere. I don't want to say that Arminius is a one-trick pony,
but
if you've got a good trick, keep doing it. Some people say we're one-trick ponies because we just do history podcasts with dick jokes in them, and we go, so it fucking works. Yeah. Like, what's
and where they're going? There are no roads. There are no paths. It's just deeper and deeper into the forest. And again, I don't know what Germanicus is thinking, but he's probably at the very least thinking, hey, I've got a decent number of troops, and this time I know not to trust Arminius, so maybe it'll turn out better for me this time.
Yeah, so at last the Germans halted in a plain and set up like they were going to do battle.
Right.
All right, this is where we were heading all along. We're ready. And Germanicus sends his cavalry towards them.
Yeah.
But then, of course, more Germans appeared like magic from out of the woods, like Boccaccio from behind the curtains of Maria's bedroom.
With a knife.
Where they'd been hiding for an ambush. And the Roman cavalry nearly gets driven into a swamp.
Yeah, believe it or not, it was an ambush. The ambush was sprung, and it would have probably worked, but Germanicus, at least to his credit, we weren't there, and I'm sorry the books cover this, but we weren't. Germanicus does send in his legions, and they're able to save the cavalry. Now, it's not a victory. It's pretty much a stalemate, but his cavalry were saved. Both sides bleed each other, but it's late in the season, so Germanicus hopefully knows he's not Varus, and he's going to pull out of there as fast as he possibly can. But he does have Germans, you know, right next to him, so it's going to be a tricky situation for him.
Germanicus looked at his watch and said, "Oh shit! Look at the time. I've got this thing that I'm supposed to be at.
They want me to
speak. It's not that I don't think I can win this. Trust me, I could win this.
I could win.
We're fucking Romans.
Yeah.
But I've got this thing. We'll have to reschedule.
I've got to cancel twice.
So sorry.
Yeah.
My bad. That's right. Yeah. It's a thing with a foot doctor, and I've got this, you know, this fungus, and he's really hard to get
it's
in.
Spreading.
To see if I don't take this appointment, it could be months before I get in again.
He's
my whole
specialist.
Foot will fall off.
Yeah. The waiting list.
So they leave.
Right.
So it's what David Markham would refer to as a strategic withdrawal. It's not a retreat.
No.
It's a strategic withdrawal.
But here's the part I don't get. Okay, I know you got to leave, but you haven't defeated Arminius. But Germanicus breaks up his forces again to get out of there. I would have thought that he would have kept them together for security's sake, but no, he's going to go out the way he came in, with his forces divided into three groups.
Well, imagine you're Germanicus.
Mm-hmm.
On one hand, you can walk all the way back, or you can get on a boat.
The love boat.
What are you going to do?
Right. I'm going to take a cruise. I'm going to take a cruise on a German river. I've always wanted to do that, and he beat me to it.
Oh, God.
The love boat.
Love. Exciting and new. Expecting you and love, life's sweetest reward. Let it flow, it floats back to you.
Say, what a great premise for a show. just watching the opening credits here on YouTube.
Right.
Like, it was just, yeah, you had your basic cast of the Love Boat. For the kids who don't know what the fuck this is.
You're missing out.
Show in the like early 80s, right. late 70s, early 80s, the Love Boat. Yeah, basically, it was an ocean liner.
Mm-hmm. Crucial.
Where people fucked, basically. A lot of fucking going on. You never get to see it, but it's hinted at.
It could have been better.
You've got out of how many people do you have on an ocean liner, like crew? You've probably got 100 right. crew.
Couple, I don't know.
Yeah. You got to see five of them. The captain, sexy babe. Guy.
Yeah.
Funny black guy, bartender.
Right.
A couple of funny white guys. A doctor who was from Get Smart. right. And Herman the German in Get Smart. And then, so they're your regulars. And then every week in every episode, you've just got a ton of B-lister character actors.
That's true, though.
Who, and some A-listers, like in this episode that I'm watching the trailer for or the intro for, you've got Robert Vaughn.
Wow.
You know, Robert Vaughn was one of the guest stars. Gloria Vanderbilt, Robert Vaughn, McLean Stevenson.
Wow.
Who was off MASH. Robert Vaughn, who was the original captain, commander of the 4077, I think, MASH. Robert Vaughn. So you had like, you know, big names, and they come in and they just do little cameos. It'd be like, oh, it's that guy from that thing. And it was just, you had comics and actors and rich, celebrities. It was little, just an excuse. Yeah, an excuse to just have them come on, and it was fun.
Yeah.
Why don't we have TV shows like The Love Boat, right? That's what I call.
Remake. I don't hear anybody. Okay, never mind.
Yeah, they should bring back The Love Boat. What a fucking great idea. They're rebooting.
I want to be the
all these old shows.
Yeah, bring it
reboot
back.
The Love Boat, I'm saying. And this time make it really dirty. Like it's a fuck boat. Call it the fuck boat. And it's just drugs and skanky porn midgets, like greased up donkey shows. Same format, but just make it double X rated, because it's, you know, the second decade of the 21st century. You can do that now. It's like there's, it's like Game of Thrones level sex mixed with The Love Boat. And even better, and the crew, like, so the crew are the same in terms of their like innocent, just good old, you know,
fashion. They have no idea what's going
people.
On.
But, yeah, they have no idea. Around them, it's just like fucking feces and sex and slime, and it's just dirty. And they're like, "Huh, that's weird. Wonder where everyone's that's gone." And they just and these donkey? Secret cleanup crews come in at every port. It's Mr. Wolf and his cleanup crew comes in and they clean it up before the crew find out what's going on. And it's just sex slaves going on. There's donkey. It's just, and the fuck boat. That's what.
And the premise is, the premise is it has to be cleaned up so the crew can never figure out what's going on because it would just ruin them. So that's the premise of the show, is hiding everything from them.
Yeah,
brilliant.
And every episode, the crew nearly stumbles across something.
But not.
And somebody comes in and diverts them at the last moment. And they're
with
like, okay.
With a puppy.
Yeah, I'll come over here and play bridge. Yeah, puppy. Yeah.
We are geniuses.
We have to make that show.
Stan and Barry ain't got shit on us.
If anyone is listening to this and you're in LA and you're in the TV business, call
chop,
us.
Chop.
We've got it all worked out.
I want to be the bartender.
The fuck boat. Making sure the crew never knows they're on a fuck boat. Stuffed with druggies and dirty hoes.
Julia.
Anywho, fuck, where were we? Oh, yeah, so he goes on a boat. That's where we were. Germanicus is like, all right, you guys, Chichinga. Listen, we're going to make it fair. I'm going to flip a coin.
It's going to be a race. Uh-huh.
Heads, my head, I go on a boat.
Right.
Tails, You walk. Yes, hold on. That's not how. No, fucking shut up.
I'm Dramaticus. The Caesar.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Can I inspect that coin? No, can't. It's my special coin.
Stay away.
Don't you dare challenge my coin tossing ability. I'm a Caesar.
That's right. You're not.
So yeah, Chichinga has to walk back.
Wow.
Now, to be fair, Germanicus tells him to walk quickly. Look, you got the Germans coming behind you, so walk quickly.
Piss them off.
But you can do it. Yeah. You can do it. There's a causeway. Good news is, Chichinga, there's a causeway.
Right.
That Domitius Ahenobarbus, Dom Redbeard, built.
Right. When?
17 years ago. Should be all right. Should be okay. Should work.
Still got the plastic on it.
Just take the causeway.
Yeah.
And walk fast. Don't run. Right. Might fall over, hurt yourself. You don't look like you're running away. Bad look. Right. Remember,
you don't do that.
In the words of David Markham, it's a strategic withdrawal. It's not a retreat.
Quickly.
Strategic withdrawal.
Run, Forrest, run.
Just walk quickly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So how does Chichinga go with his strategic withdrawal?
Oh, and just the other part is that Albino Vanus Pedophile has his cavalry along the coast. So Kakina is going along, and you've got to imagine he's not very happy, waving at Germanicus goodbye on a ship or whatever. But the point is, because the Germans are carrying less, they don't have a baggage train, they're able to get in front of the Romans, and they occupy the woods on either side of the causeway. And like you said a second ago, the causeway is not in great shape. It's been, 17 years or whatever, so it's going to have to be repaired before it can be used. So Kakina is not what I would call a happy camper.
Well, he's a camper because he has to camp.
Yes, he does.
But not a happy camper, right. So we might go, well, fucking, why is Roman engineering and all that kind of shit? Like, they can build things. Like, you and I, when we were in Rome a couple of months ago, we went to the Pantheon, not the one built by Agrippa because that burnt down, but the one that was built after that to replace the one that so I built another one that burnt down, then fell over into the mud, but the third one stayed
up.
But it's what, 1900 years old, in very good nick. But of course, when you're on campaign and you're building a causeway through a marsh,
right,
you're not building it to last forever. You're throwing it together to last for a couple of months. It's a quick job. It's a quick job.
It's a quickie.
You get from you'll get from Heather today for your birthday.
Gotta
you'll get
hope
a quick job.
If the birthday gods are listening,
she'll be watching TV.
I have no problem with
and
that.
And on her iPhone while she's doing it, you're not going to get any eye contact or any.
Eye contact throws me off.
You'll be watching Doctor Who anyway. You'll be watching David Tennant.
D-Dog, and I'm done.
Actually, you're onto Matt Smith, so you'll be watching Karen Gillian.
That's okay with me.
Anyway.
So you're right.
Heather will be on the phone to a friend.
That's fine.
I know.
I'm just exercising.
I know. Barely. Well, she's giving a quit rub and tug.
Again, I'm not complaining. But Kakina, like you said, he's making camp. He's dividing up his forces. The people who drew the long straws get to work on the causeway. The people who drew the short straws have to fight the Germans while the other guys are repairing it. So their first day is not going very well, but at least Kakina's got a plan and he's putting it together. But by nightfall, the men are getting discouraged and the Germans are getting the upper hand. They are sensing victory.
Chichinga, by the way, according to Tacitus, had been in 40 battles. So he's a cool motherfucker. His wallet, somebody saw his wallet and it just had bad motherfucker written on it. So that's how you knew who Chichinga, which one was Chichinga's wallet, if it ever was left on the table.
So
yeah, he's got some guys repairing the causeway, and they got the good news is that they actually got a lot of work done on that first day. They got a lot of work done repairing the causeway. Yeah. The bad news is that night the Germans managed to destroy all of the work that they did to the causeway. So, but you know, they still got to punch their cards and they still had to get paid for that. A bit like my IT guy who spent a week not fixing our servers and then still wants to get paid for it at the end of it. I go, but you didn't fix it. He goes, well, yeah, I didn't say I'd fix it. I just said I'd work on it. You got to pay me anyway.
Can I get a job like that?
You have a job like that, motherfucker. What are you talking about? You do less work than the IT guy and still expect to get paid for it. At least he did something.
Pitch him in there. Yeah, good for him, sucker. Anyway.
I'm pretty sure the two of you are in cahoots.
Let's drive Cam crazy campaign.
Anyway, that night, the ghost of Varus appeared to Chichinga in a dream.
Dream sequence. I love these.
Yeah, dream sequence. Chichinga. This is the way Tacitus, which, by the way, is probably pronounced Tacitus with a hard C, but
I
anyway.
I can't learn that.
Tacitus. That's tacky. Tacitus. Tacitus writes, it was a restless night for different reasons. The barbarians in their festivity, filling the valleys under the hills and the echoing glens with merry song or savage shouts, while in the Roman camp were flickering fires, broken exclamations, and the men lay scattered along the entrenchments or wandered from tent to tent, wakeful rather than watchful. A ghastly dream appalled the general. He seemed to see Quintilius Varus covered with blood, rising out of the swamps, and to hear him, as it were, calling to him. But he did not, as he imagined, obey the call. He even repelled his hand as it stretched over him. Tell you what, Tacitus can fucking write, man, I got to tell you. I've enjoyed reading his annals during this process. He had a way.
Nice.
He had a
Thank
way with the
Boccaccio.
Words, old Tacitus.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So the next day, the Romans tried to move out, but some of the legions got stuck in the mud, and when there was absolute maximum chaos and mud stickiness, that is when Arminius charged.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty smart of him. So so the Romans are moving out. You got the 1st Legion in the front, the 5th Legion on the right, the 21st Legion on the left, and the 20th bringing up the rear. But like you just said, the 5th Legion on the right, the 21st on the left, they get stuck down in the mud. It's incoherent. It's not a properly formed defensive unit. And Arminius knows this, and he's just waiting. And when it, like you said, when it gets absolutely chaotic, that's when they focus. That's when they charge. However, this should have been a complete victory for Arminius, but I'm beginning to think the Germans are learning too much from the Romans. As the Germans are charging in, they're not thinking about killing, they're not thinking about, well, they are, but they're not, their first priority is not killing and glory and revenge or whatever. The Germans are focused on the Roman baggage train and all the booty, all the gold, all the food, all the weapons or whatever. They are literally, for them, they have become nothing more than mercenaries. And they didn't have their eye on the ball, and they let Arminius down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So instead of repeating the victory they had over Varus, wiping out these legions, the Germans just go and grab the booty. And like Donald Trump. That's right. They're grabbing the Romans by the pussy. And by nightfall, the surviving Romans had managed to get to dry ground. Yeah. But they had lost their tools and their tents and their first aid kits in the mud.
Is that
they
bad?
Didn't have much food. Yeah, it's kind of bad. And what they had in terms of food was covered in blood and slime. Now,
yeah,
you know, that's also what was going on the fuck boat, but different circumstances. They were covered in blood and slime as well. But
that's a good thing.
Yeah, in a good way. Yeah, good way. Yeah.
But,
Yeah.
I was just going to say, yeah, so by the end of the day, they do manage to find some firmer ground. They make a pathetic camp because they've got very few tools, but they pretty much sense that tomorrow is going to be their last day. They're going to do a repeat of Varus and his three legions, and they just can't see any way out of this. Everything is about to end for these guys, and so their morale could not be any lower, and they are panicking.
And that night, a horse broke loose in their camp, ran through the camp, and created a panic amongst the troops. Mm. They thought the Germans had breached their defenses, and they made a mad rush for the gates. Chichinga tried to stop them. They wouldn't listen, and so he threw himself on the ground in front of the gates.
Wow.
Now, that's pretty bold. The ballsy troops didn't want to trample their commander to death yet. And at last they sort of listened to their commanders, and that it was just a runaway horse, right, and they calmed the fuck down. Yeah. But you got to hand it to Chichinga. That's taking that's the bull ballsy by the horns, man. Yeah. I mean, throwing yourself in front of your stampeding, panicking troops is one way to get their attention. I'm not sure I'd be doing that.
Right. I would have stepped on his face. But the point is, because this guy's been around and his men probably respect him, I mean, they didn't want to hurt him. So the tribunes and the centurions took advantage of their pause, got them all back in some kind of order. But the point is, now that this latest emergency has been taken care of, when the sun comes up the next day, Kakinna has only got one order. It is time to run, fucking run to the Rhine, fucking Rhine, and they are just going to take off. Don't stop. Just head out. And it's almost to the point where it's every man for himself. But you get the sense that there's very little order left. It is just time to scoot, boot, and boogie, and just get the fuck out of there.
Now, the Germans, Arminius, wants to wipe them out, but he wants to let them leave their camp first.
Yeah.
And then wait until they get themselves into an awkward situation, as they no doubt will.
Right.
Surround them and wipe them out like he did to Varus.
Easy peasy.
But yet again, his authority is being challenged, and this time it's by his uncle, Inglorious Bastard. It's bad enough that he had to fight Segestes' non-stop suggestions.
Right.
Now, his uncle is causing trouble.
Oh,
family. He argues that instead of letting the Romans leave the camp and then surrounding them and wiping them out, they should all just storm the camp. He thinks the Romans are weak, morale is low, and the upside, he says, is the booty isn't going to get muddy. Now, I don't know about you, Ray, but there's nothing more I hate than muddy booty.
Oh, you're not a pig fucker. Okay, I did not suspect that. No, but you're right.
One rule I have is if I'm going to hit some booty, it can't be muddy. You got to wipe the mud off.
Why should I lick it off something? I don't know. But
before I hit it.
Exactly.
But so again, I'm with Inglorious Bastard on this. You don't want muddy booty because you don't know where that mud is from. Yeah, and so I'm with Inglorious Bastard on this. Yeah. Nothing worse than muddy booty.
Well, because of people like you, he wins the day, and the troops decide to go ahead and attack. And here's the one thing that we should have learned over the more than 100 hours of covering the Romans. They can fuck up a lot of things, but one thing that they are engineers. And when they have all their tools, they make a pretty impressive camp. I'm sure this camp wasn't up to those normal standards, but it's still a Roman camp. These guys have been doing this for, almost 1,000 years, 500 years or whatever. They know what they're doing. So even though it's subpar, it's still a pretty pretty resistant thing. And Arminius was right to say, no, wait for them to be out of that camp, be confused in the mud and the marsh, and then we attack them. But he loses the argument, so the attack is on, and these guys come at the Romans in their camp thinking, I'm going to kick some ass, and I'm going to get some booty, but more importantly, it's going to be clean booty. There's nothing I love more than some clean booty.
Yeah, you want clean booty. That's like for the kids out there. This is one of the things.
Hygiene.
Let us share that with you.
Hygiene.
Hygiene. Clean your booty. Everyone will thank you for it. Just
right.
Clean your booty.
I will. Thank you, David Tennant.
What?
No, I just assumed.
Allons-y!
I just assumed they had a clean booty. Anyway, so they attacked the camp.
Oh, David Tennant would have a very clean booty. Let me assure you of that. Yeah.
Polished.
So the greed of the Germans was too strong. And, you know, the Romans seemed to get excited by the fact that they were getting attacked.
Yeah.
Contrary to Inglourious Basterds' theory that their morale was low, there's nothing that the Romans liked more than fighting for booty.
Especially their own.
That I like, yeah. don't come and take my booty. So the upside is too, they were on decent level ground. They're not in swamps. They're not in a forest. This is where Romans, fight best. Yes.
Yeah.
Now the German confidence rapidly disappeared when they realized the Romans weren't as weak as Inglourious Basterd had tried to make them sound.
Right.
And this time the day ends with a resounding Roman victory. They destroy a lot of the Germans. Now Arminius escapes.
Damn.
Inglourious Basterd gets seriously wounded, serves him fucking right.
Right.
But, some of the histories say it was a massacre, but as we'll see, the Cherusci were back fighting the next day, so it couldn't have been that much of a massacre, but certainly a lot of them seem to have been destroyed.
Yeah.
Now, meanwhile, back at the Rhine base.
The Rhine Ranch.
Yeah, the Rhine Ranch. People were getting merry. And Mary didn't mind. what's going on back at the Rhine Ranch, Ray?
Let's see here. There are rumors. There are rumors at the Rhine Ranch that Kakinna's army has been surrounded. And in fact, because they're surrounded, they can't move. Other Germans are now free to come at the Rhine Ranch. They're coming at the river. They're coming full speed. And at this point, the garrison is not in a strong shape as it has been in because all these forces have gone out into the German territory. So not only is Kakinna's army probably going to be wiped out, but the Germans are coming. The Germans are coming. What are we going to do? And the place, the Rhine Ranch panics. The people are just freaking out like the Germans did when they find out they weren't going to win against Kakinna. And the men there, and this is completely disloyal and unhonorable and cowardly, they want to destroy the bridge at Venterra. And if they do, if any of Kakinna's men are still alive, they won't be able to cross and they'll be wiped out by the Germans. But the people at the camp don't care. They want to pull down this bridge to save themselves. And they haven't seen any Germans. They're just freaking panicking and not thinking.
Well, it's not a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
Blowing up bridges.
But you need verification. You can't just take rumors and make huge decisions like this on rumors, but that's just how I would
you
be.
Could, you could have some people stationed near the bridge and some lookouts saying if you see the Germans coming, then you run back and take the bridge. Yeah, there's no need to be hasty about it.
Yeah.
One person was able to stop them from pulling down the bridge. And that person was Agrippina.
Yes.
Germanicus's wife. Daughter, as we said last episode, just to remind people, daughter of Agrippa and Julia the Slut Whore.
Agrippina's got some balls on her. I just need to say
granddaughter
that. Woman, yeah.
Of Augustus.
Yeah. Big balls. Big Roman patrician balls.
Lady balls.
Lady balls.
Big lady balls. Now, she stripped down naked and started dancing on the bridge. Oh, no, wait. Maybe I just dreamed that. No, yeah. That's... No, sorry. I just dreamed that.
That's a lot.
Whatever
of
she
boat.
Did...
Yeah, yeah.
The bridge stayed up, which was lucky for the survivors of Chichinga's legions as they straggled back and were greeted personally by Agrippina, maybe naked, maybe not. We don't know.
Histories
are silent on the subject.
Yeah.
On the bridge.
Right.
She saved Roman troops' lives. Now, you would think Thibaut, when he heard about this, would be pretty happy that she did that. But was he, Ray?
No. I mean, he hears about her standing there and handing out clothing and bandages and showing concern for these people. But for Tiberius, who doesn't trust her, and more importantly, her husband, this is just further proof of her ambition and maybe the ambition of her husband. And besides which, let's be honest, Tiberius is a good conservative Roman. She's a woman. That's not exactly her place. And the fact that she has more power over these troops than their commanders, Tiberius is truly concerned about his future, about the future of the Roman state, and this is just more fuel for the fire. And supposedly Tacitus says that Sejanus fostered this kind of thinking in Tiberius. So he's thinking on its own. He's getting it whispered into his ear. Even though Germanicus is doing something concrete against the Germans and his wife is doing everything she possibly can to support her husband, like what Livia did with Augustus, Tiberius is taking it all the wrong way, and it's just fueling the fire for his jealousy, his insecurity, and it's just going to blow up at some point, but he does not trust these two, this power couple, at all.
Yeah, this is what Tacitus actually writes. A woman of heroic spirit, she assumed during those days the duties of a general, and distributed clothes or medicine among the soldiers as they were destitute or wounded. According to Caius Plinius, the historian of the German wars, who's Caius Plinius, Ray?
I don't know. Tell me. It wasn't in my cliff notes.
Pliny the Elder, or Pliny the Elder, we would know him as. Caius Plinius.
His street name. Gotcha.
She stood at the extremity of the bridge and bestowed praise and thanks on the returning legions. This made a deep impression on the mind of Tiberius. Such zeal, he thought, could not be guileless. It was not against a foreign foe that she was thus courting the soldiers. Generals had nothing left them when a woman went among the companies, attended the standards, ventured on bribery, as though it showed but slight ambition to parade her son in a common soldier's uniform. Who was her son? Caligula. Dressing him up in a common soldier's uniform. Caligula, little boots. He's wearing little soldier's boots.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Agrippina had now more power with the armies than officers, than generals. A woman had quelled a mutiny, which the sovereign's name could not check. All this was inflamed and aggravated by Sejanus, who, with his thorough comprehension of the character of Tiberius, sowed for a distant future hatreds which the emperor might treasure up and might exhibit when fully matured.
Wow. Yeah.
Do you know what happened to Pliny the Elder, Ray?
No, please tell me.
Just before he died, Vespasian appointed Pliny the fleet commander of the Roman Navy. Now, on August 24th, in the year 79 CE, Pliny was stationed at Misenum, mm-hmm. at the time of the great eruption of Mount Vesuvius.
Wow.
He was preparing to cross the Bay of Naples to observe the phenomenon directly.
Oh, God.
He was like, big volcano. Fuck, how often do you get to see that? I'm going to go and stand right next to it and see what
Give me an umbrella.
He knew it was going to happen that day because David Tennant had arrived in Pompeii.
Sure. Some people have
Album where, yeah. I don't know if you noticed this, but who did he meet when he was in Pompeii on the day of the eruption?
The future doctor.
Yeah, he met Peter Capaldi there.
Yeah.
Bit of timey-wimey business going on. So anyway, he's out in his ship, and then he gets a message from his friend Rectina asking him to rescue her and Pomponianus. Rectal vagina and pompous anus. I have them in my notes. So he races towards them in what Tacitus calls a fast-sailed cutter.
Right.
As they're getting close to Pompeii, Pliny's helmsman advises that they turn back.
No shit.
To which Pliny replied, "Fortune favors the brave. Steer to where Pomponianus is." Fortune favors the bold, as you've often heard it said. There you go. So Pliny the Elder said that.
Yeah.
So he gets there. They rescue Pompous Anus, but they couldn't find Rectal Vagina anywhere.
Aww,
there was already pumice rocks, falling on Herculaneum and Pompeii. I can't remember if it was Pompeii or Herculaneum. Where they sailed to. Anyway, they loaded everyone they could onto the cutter, but the winds were too strong to allow them to leave. Pliny apparently is trying to keep everyone calm. He says, "Hey, let's eat."
How about a snack?
Tacitus writes, "Pliny reassured his party by feasting, bathing, and sleeping while waiting for the wind to abate. But finally, they had to leave the buildings for fear of collapse and try their luck in the pumice fall. Eventually, Pliny sits down and can't get up and was left behind. And they found him 3 days later, after everything had settled down, covered by pumice. And if you don't know what pumice is... it's very light and porous volcanic rock, which is formed when a gas-rich froth of glassy lava solidifies quickly. We've all used pumice stone,
right.
So that's how it's formed. It's volcanic rock.
Wow.
And just like Pliny, germs had some problems getting back to the Rhine too. to lighten the load on his ships...
Right.
He made two more legions get off and walk.
Yeah. He's got four legions. It's coastal shallow waters. He's having trouble. So he makes the 2nd and the 14th, thank you very much, get off the ships. And they're under the command of Vitellius. And at first everything is going fine. But then a gale comes along and the men are surrounded by floods. Their baggage is trapped. Vitellius does manage to take them to higher ground, but it's not looking very good. Fortunately, some god, is on their side, and the waters recede. The army marches to the mouth of the Rhine, and the men re-embark, and they make their trip back to the base. But it had to be touch and go there for a while. And Germanicus gets some criticism for this, and again, I don't know if this is sincere or not, but he seems to genuinely be open to complaints coming about him about the decisions he made from the very beginning of this campaign. And he seems to be listening to his men. Again, maybe he's trying to ingratiate himself or show that he's a good commander, but he does let some people vent their frustrations about this entire episode.
Well, historians tend to give him some flack for this. I mean, storms like this weren't uncommon during this during the season. They criticize him for not having more ships. But from what I could see, none of it seems to have hampered his popularity in his own time.
Right.
Gaul, Spain, and the rest of Italy all compete to provide him with new weapons, horses, and money. He dipped into his own pockets.
Always a good
to
move.
refit out his men.
Yeah.
And, you know, he seems to have been generally concerned about them. Tacitus writes, after that, he might also soften the remembrance of the disaster by kindness. He went round to the wounded, applauded the feats of soldier after soldier, examined their wounds, raised the hopes of one, the ambition of another, and the spirits of all by his encouragement and interest, thus strengthening their ardor for himself and for battle. So, you know, like a Julius Caesar, like an Alexander, he seemed to get down. He was a man of the troops. He really paid them attention, made them feel special, made them feel like he cared about their individual circumstances, recognized their efforts, their loyalty. And that's what good leaders do, particularly when shit goes bad. They get down there and they go, listen, okay, look, I appreciate everything that you're doing. Right. He wasn't staying above the fray. He was getting down. And that I imagine, would have just made Tiberius fear him even more.
Absolutely. And sometimes we get a little cynical, but it doesn't matter if he's faking it or not. He does do the rounds. He does spend his own money. And this helps his men and his officers, and that's important, get over their anger at him. So it's not going to come as any surprise that this entire, campaign is hailed as a success. There's triumphal ornaments for Cicinna, Apronius, and Sejanus, even though we don't seem to know much about what he did. But the point is, this is hailed as a success. The Germans have been taught a lesson, and since Germanicus is the guy who's leading this, we have to come up with something really fucking big for him, because he deserves it. He's the one who helped us get back our revenge for the destruction of Varus's legion so many years ago. Someone has finally done something against the Germans.
Remind the listeners what a triumphal ornament is, Ray.
I don't remember specifics. Is that the I don't know, the grass crown or I don't know. Tell me what it is.
A triumphal ornament is when you got the privilege of wearing the dress and you get the other privileges granted to a triumphator, but you don't get the actual triumphal procession.
You dress up,
you don't
and
get
no
the
party.
Parade.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
You get the badge, you get the privileges, and the privileges include wearing the badge, the triumphal dress, in public.
Right.
You do get a corona triumphalis, the ones we saw at the
Colosseum
that Tony Kynaston didn't buy us. Yeah, that we thought Tony was going to surprise us with, but he gave us caps.
instead of $130 golden crown, we got $7 caps. Same thing.
Hey. Yeah. We love those caps. We appreciate
do.
Those
Tony
caps.
Tony just messing.
It's the thought. Yeah. It's the thought that matters.
It has to be the thought, because there wasn't much. And anyway, thank you, Tony.
Now, you can't make fun of Tony. He's sensitive. Like,
no,
love you, Tony. We're just fucking with you, Tony.
Yeah.
Yes, we saw. So the gold laurel wreaths was the Corona Triumphalis. They got one of those. They got an ivory baton.
Nice.
They got a tunic embroidered with palm leaves, and the toga picta, the painted toga. It was a toga which was dyed entirely purple with an embroidered gold border.
Nice.
Supposedly the official robe of the old Roman kings.
Right.
They got to wear all of that in public. The only other Romans allowed to wear that stuff were the emperor himself, and they didn't even have an emperor at this stage, but eventually the emperor, the two consuls, and magistrates when presiding over games.
The 1%.
So look, it was a big deal, the triumphal ornamenta.
Yeah.
You got you look the part. Didn't get the big Macy's Day parade, but you got to wear the shit.
Yeah.
In addition, you got a bronze statue Whoa. Erected in the Forum of Augustus.
Nice. Now we're talking.
Yeah.
Yeah, fucking take that.
And there was another thing. You had the right to display another statue of yourself wearing your triumphal attire.
Right.
In the vestibule of your own house, which could be displayed by your descendants.
Nice. Oh, that's a conversation starter right there. You bring people in, you purposefully walk them by that. Of course, they're going to
compliment. Oh, that old thing?
Yeah.
That old thing? Oh, that's just...
That's what I kick some ass in Germany. I totally forgotten about it until you mentioned it just now.
Yeah, yeah.
I hang my cloak on it.
Oh, yes, I am wearing my gold robe and my golden crown. But it's just, it's Wednesday. I didn't put this on specially because you were coming over. It's
the
just,
laundry's
just what I throw on for
it's laundry day. It's all I got left.
Laundry day.
Yeah.
Well, do you remember how they cleaned their togas? How they got them white?
Something to do with urine.
Yeah. Yeah, so my other toga's in the piss. People are pissing. I've got slaves pissing on my other togas right now. So the purple one you can't piss on because it'll bleach the purple out of it, which came from shells, I seem to recall. So, yes, it's piss day is what they call it, not wash day.
No,
piss day. Slaves are pissing in a tub on my
togas.
They drink
a bunch of water, right? Right.
Oh, that's what the
you
smell
want clean
is.
Piss.
Yeah, that's – yeah.
Yeah.
Ken, no eating
no grape
asparagus.
Soda. Right.
No asparagus the day before wash day. Because then my toga's going to smell like asparagus for a week.
I
can't have
that. I check the teeth to see if there's any broccoli in there. You can't have any.
You walk into the room and people go, your slave's been eating asparagus again? Yes, yes. Fucking
don't let them piss on my
them.
Toga. Yeah.
Don't have asparagus the day before wash day.
Damn it.
Yes.
We make ourselves laugh.
Yeah, Kelly. Fucking hell, Kelly. How dare you allow that question to even be asked on your Facebook group? It's not even, should be illegal, that question. Anywho. Yes. So Chichinga and a couple of other guys got the ornamenta. Tiberius was offered some benefits as well, accolades. Tacitus writes, the title of father of his country, which the people had so often thrust upon him, Tiberius refused, nor would he allow obedience to be sworn to his enactments, though the Senate voted it, for he said repeatedly that all human things were uncertain and that the more he had obtained, the more precarious was his position. But he did not thereby create a belief in his patriotism, for he had revived the law of treason, the name of which indeed was known in ancient times, though other matters came under its jurisdiction, such as the betrayal of an army, or seditious stirring up of the people, or in short, any corrupt act by which a man had impaired the majesty of the people of Rome. Deeds only were liable to accusation, words went unpunished. And I want to talk a little bit about this just as we wrap up this episode. So this is the lese majeste laws coming back. Augustus had played around with this a little bit as well. I remember we talked about this a while ago on that series. But Tiberius brings it back. But he's according to Tacitus anyway, Tiberius is fairly moderate with this. He does go on to explain, Tacitus, this is how accusations of treason became a tactic people used against each other. Now, this wasn't a thing previously. Right. You know, people would attack the Senate and other members of the elite all the time. We know this. Mm-hmm. This is the cause of all the civil wars, and we know that they were brutal and they attacked each other mercilessly, both in word and in deed, forever, and particularly in sort of the 100 years before Julius Caesar. And But under Augustus initially and now under Tiberius, they start to crack down on this kind of behavior. But did you read the stories of Phalanius and Rubrius in Tacitus?
No, please tell me.
Let me read from the annals of Tacitus. It will not be uninteresting if I relate, in the cases of Phalanius and Rubrius, Roman knights of moderate fortune, the first experiments at such accusations in order to explain the origin of a most terrible scourge, how by Tiberius's cunning it crept in among us, how subsequently it was checked, finally how it burst into flame and consumed everything. Against Phalanius, it was alleged by his accuser that he had admitted among the votaries of Augustus, a votary being like a religious adherent, like a monk or a nun,
mm-hmm.
who in every great house were associated into a kind of brotherhood, one Cassius, a buffoon of infamous life, and that he had also, in selling his gardens, including in the sale, a statue of Augustus. Against Rubrius, the charge was that he had violated by perjury the divinity of Augustus. Mm. When this was known to Tiberius, he wrote to the consuls that his father had not had a place in heaven decreed to him, that the honor might be turned to the destruction of the citizens. So let me stop for a second and go over that again. So the accusation was that Rubrius had said something that had demeaned the divinity of Augustus. You know, he's not a real god. Or he's not as good a god as the other gods, or something like that. And when they took that to Tiberius, Tiberius said, "Listen, my father wasn't decreed a god so that it could be used against the citizens." So he's like, "Just ignore him. Like, sticks and stones may break Augustus's bones, but names will never hurt him. Let it go. Don't worry about it." Also, the fact that this guy Cassius had sold a house that had a statue of Augustus in it. People are saying, "Well, you can't sell a statue of a god with your house. That's wrong." And Tiberius was like, "Listen, and here's actually how Tacitus puts it: Cassius, the actor, with men of the same profession, used to take part in the games which had been consecrated by his mother, Tiberius's mother, to the memory of Augustus.
Right.
Nor was it contrary to the religion of the state for the emperor's image, like those of other deities, to be added to a sale of gardens and houses. As to the oath, the thing ought to be considered as if the man had deceived Jupiter. Wrongs done to the gods were the gods' concern."
Ah.
So, breaking it down, Tiberius said, "Listen, let the gods worry about insults done to the gods, right? There's nothing in our laws that say you can't sell a statue of a god along with your house or your garden. Like, fucking calm the fuck down, peeps. Like, not bothered, basically." Tacitus also says, "Then there was the incident of Marcellus, proconsul of Bithynia, who was accused of treason by his quaestor, Capio Crispinus. He had placed his own statue above those of the Caesars and set the bust of Tiberius on another statue from which he had struck off the head of Augustus."
Oh, fuck.
"At this, the emperor's wrath blazed forth. Breaking through his habitual silence, he exclaimed that in such a case he would himself too give his vote openly to oath, that the rest might be under the same obligation." So this one really pissed Tiberius off, and he's going to, even his vote's not going to be anonymous, he's going to let them know what he voted,
around
what should happen to this motherfucker.
Right.
And then Tacitus continues, "There lingered even then a few signs of expiring freedom." And so Cneius Piso asked, "In what order will you vote, Caesar? If first, I shall know what to follow. If last, I fear that I may differ from you unwillingly."
Ah.
So, you know, to paraphrase, if I have to vote before you, I'm worried I might get it wrong.
Cock it up. Right.
So it's great that you're going to tell us what you voted, but could you, like, vote first so we all know how to vote?
Really make it easy on us.
Tacitus continues, Tiberius was deeply moved and repenting of his outburst, all the more because of its thoughtlessness. He quietly allowed the accused to be acquitted of the charges of treason. As for the question of extortion, it was referred to a special commission. So at this juncture, according to Tacitus, mm-hmm. writing 100 years later, there were the beginnings of lese majeste laws being introduced, people were being accused of it. Tiberius at this stage was being fairly moderate about it, going, listen, let the gods worry about insults to the gods, sticks and stones may break my bones. But then he did, in the case of Marcellus, create a ruckus, but he backed down when people said, oh, people were obviously scared.
Yeah.
Let's hope Tiberius stays that way. And that is where we're going to leave this episode. When we pick it up next time, we'll see that it's not over with Arminius and the Germans and Germanicus and Tiberius. And we've got some actual conspiracies against Tiberius that hopefully we'll have time to cover in the next episode. We'll be back next week.
Exciting and new.
Come on board, and trust me, you will come on board.
We're expecting you to come
to fuck.
Life's sweetest reward. Let it flow.
Oh, let it flow.
Let it flow, baby, all over
it
me.
It floats back to you.
Oh, it floats back to you. What?
Oh.